The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for November is a book and a DVD. It's a Bible study on three major themes in Scripture: witness, mercy, life together. Now, the DVD features four instructional videos by Lutheran Church Missouri Synod President Matt Harrison. You can purchase Witness, Mercy, Life Together by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, Witness, Mercy, Life Together. That's the Gloucester Cathedral Choir singing a hymn written by the man that we're going to talk about for the next 20 minutes of Issues, Etc., John of Damascus from the 8th century. He's also known as the Last Father, and we'll find out why right away as we talk with Pastor Heath Curtis, pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Warden, Illinois, and Zion Lutheran Church in Carpenter, Illinois. Heath, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Always good to be here, Todd.
Why is John of Damascus sometimes referred to as the Last Father?
It's really an historical recognition by the Church that the world changed in a major way in the mid to late 7th century, namely the coming of Islam into the formerly Christian lands of northern Africa and the Middle East. And it's really the world of the early Church Fathers simply stopped. You know, the world just simply turned in such a dramatic way that world just kind of went away. Whereas beforehand, the world in 325 and the world in 625, there was so much continuity there, much more continuity than we can imagine. You know, 300 years previously in the land that I'm sitting in southern Illinois, there were a few French white settlers, I guess. But it was owned by France. You know, there was no United States of America. We are so used to now having history-changing epochs come every decade or two. But the world from the First Council of Nicaea to the coming of Islam from 325 to 630 is simply very static. As things go, very on an even keel. And with the coming of Islam, the whole world changes. Late Christian antiquity simply disappears from two-thirds of the Christian world. It's a very troubling event. And John lives through the midst of that. He's born just after the Muslim invasions of the Middle East and lives into the 8th century.
The time in which he lived for the Church obviously is a pivotal one. There's also at work during his time something for which he is largely known, and that is the so-called iconoclastic controversy. Seems foreign to us today. Explain it.
Yeah, and this is one for Lutherans. I think we're maybe still collectively making up our mind about it. The controversy is this: what is the proper place of religious art within the Church? And the biblical story that is used on both sides of the debate is the story of the bronze serpent. And our listeners will recall that the people of Israel got themselves in a spot of trouble in the wilderness wanderings with God. They had been disobedient, so he sent fiery serpents to bite them. And then he tells Moses, make this fiery bronze serpent, lift this up, and when someone looks to it in faith, they'll be healed. And this is a symbol of, this is another foreshadowing of Christ, the one who would finally crush the serpent's head and so forth. But later in Israel's history, this artifact is destroyed by one of the good kings of Israel because it had become a focal point of idolatry. And that people were, instead of looking to God who gave this symbol or looking at this as a symbol of God and his grace, they began to use it in a frankly pagan way. Well, this was the argument that folks were making about Christian art in the 8th century. They were saying, look, Christian art, good idea, we get it, but things have gone too far. People are actually worshiping images rather than worshiping God. It's just gotten very pagan. And this would, I think, rings true when Lutherans or other Protestants look at the way Christian art is used in the Roman Catholic Church or in the Eastern Orthodox Church. And at the time of the Reformation, the Reformers, who had a very high regard for John of Damascus, I'm talking about Lutheran Reformers, who had a very high regard for John of Damascus, really didn't seem to be on his side for this one. Martin Chemnitz defends the use of Christian art in churches. Lutheran churches have two-dimensional and three-dimensional depictions of Jesus in their churches. The crucifix has always been an important focal point of Lutheran worship. But we were not comfortable with the kind of defense of icons that John of Damascus and the others of that era put up. They put up a defense of icons such that we can venerate them, and they want to make fine distinctions between veneration and worship, and it's a little too much for great Lutheran theologians like Martin Chemnitz, who kind of say, you know, we get a lot of really good stuff from John of Damascus, but not quite on his side with how he wishes church art to be used.
So in essence, he was defending a position, perhaps for good reason, that is to emphasize the incarnation,
mm-hmm.
and the reality of that incarnation, which is always embedded in the argument in favor of the veneration of icons. But he was defending an improper use of church art.
Exactly, and you can see that right down to this day. If you think of a conservative, from somebody from the conservative Reformation, either Anglicans or Lutherans, what do their churches look like, and what do Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox churches look like? If you just walk in, they look very similar. Both have statues. Well, Eastern Orthodox don't have statues. That's another story. Both have paintings. Roman Catholics, Lutherans, Anglicans will all have statues. But what you won't see in the Lutheran and the Anglican congregation, you won't see the statue and then in front of it a bunch of prayer cards and candles, you see, because in the Roman use or in the Eastern Orthodox use with the icons, there is some sense in which this religious art is connected to the cult of the saints and prayer to the saints and a quasi-pagan idolatry that the Lutherans were never comfortable with. We love church art. We defend church art because, yes, Jesus is really incarnate. Luther comes back from his exile at the beginning of the Reformation and restores all the images and artistry to the church. But there is still some bathwater to be thrown out with the baby kept. And it's this idea of worshiping God through or in the images that the Lutherans have a very difficult time with.
Let's talk a little bit about his writings, both liturgical and non-liturgical. The one that's usually attributed to him is actually part of a greater writing simply called The Orthodox Faith. What is this from John of Damascus?
This is the text that is vital to the Lutheran Reformation's articulation of the faith. When you come across it in readings, you often find it the Latin title De Fide Orthodoxa, and this is a text that's very important for the same Martin Chemnitz, who is very much against the icons in a way against the way John was for them. John's book, John Damascus's book on the Orthodox faith, is key for the Lutheran articulation of who Jesus is as God and man, and in the face both of Roman Catholic and Calvinist critics. And so it's impossible to underestimate the importance of this work. It's just quoted again and again and again in Chemnitz's writings, the examination of the Council of Trent, and especially on the two natures of Christ and on the Lord's Supper. It's simply a key text for giving us a way to talk about what it means to say that Jesus is really God and really man.
Then what about these liturgical, I guess we could call them hymns or poems or prayers, that focus around Easter? And the one that probably is most familiar to us today is "Come Ye Faithful, Raise the Strain."
Yeah, like all of the really truly great theological minds in the church, St. John of Damascus wrote hymns. And this has been the great history of church music, you know, the Te Deum. That's written by, that's sung in Matins. That's St. Augustine and his father confessor, St. Anselm, wrote that. You know, Luther creates a corpus of hymns. Hilary, the great defender of the Trinity, he's got hymns. Thomas Aquinas, open up Lutheran service book. We've got a couple of hymns by Thomas Aquinas, the great defender in the Middle Ages of the reality of the Lord's Supper. They're in our hymns of the Lord's Supper. And so the same with John Damascus. Our great theologians write our hymns. Compare that to modern American evangelicalism, where the music of the church, the church's worship music, is written by recording artists. You know, people out to make a buck. You know, and so now we've got CCLI, and your church has to pay so they can get these songs and everything. You know, St. Anselm didn't make a dime off the Te Deum. He wrote this worship music so that the church might have it, and that might have it from the church's great theologians instead of Johnny off the street.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, a few more minutes with Pastor Heath Curtis, talking about 8th century hymn writer and defender of icons, John of Damascus. Where would we agree and disagree with the man, bottom line? Then we'll play Issues Etc., Soundbite of the Week, live this Friday afternoon, December the 2nd. Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
Historic, authentic Christian radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Pro-abortion, but not pro-choice.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Pro-abortion advocates say they are pro-choice. Yet when efforts are made to allow women to make an informed choice, they balk. They oppose efforts to inform women about their pregnancy and the nature of abortion, and with good reason. They know that when women are informed, they increasingly choose life. Statistics from Arizona highlight this fact. Abortions there dropped by one-third in September. Why? Because starting in September, clinics were required to inform women about the nature of abortion 24 hours before the scheduled procedure. When the truth was told, the abortion rate plummeted.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Being in the divine service, that's the place where God comes to meet us, where heaven meets earth. So we don't dress like we do when we're out on a Friday night where we're lounging in yoga pants.
There is something about the church saying, hold on, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And the church's worship, in a sense, reflects that.
The torrent of his blood that washes away sin in holy baptism. The torrent of his blood that washes us clean in absolution. The torrent of his blood that fills the chalice of his supper.
There is this coming day when it will no longer be by faith, but by sight, when we will no longer be hoping, but we will be having. And that having comes in the resurrection of our bodies.
In about 5 minutes, we'll play Issues Etc., soundbite of the week. In the meantime, a few more minutes with Pastor Heath Curtis on 8th century hymn writer and defender of icons, John of Damascus. Heath, bottom line, where would we have to agree and where would we have to disagree with John of Damascus in a nutshell?
Yeah, again, the distinction for us Lutherans, we love the stuff that he has to say about the incarnation, about who Jesus is, what it means that he's God and man. He gives witness to the great patristic tradition that goes before him that we consider ourselves a part of. Where we stand against this epoch in the church's history is this is where we see people taking what should be aids to devotion, you know, the beautiful artwork that the church has produced. We see them taking it from that and cheapening it and inadvertently turning it into something that actually takes the eyes off of Jesus. You know, the crucifixion, the sign of the crucifixion, a crucifix, is meant to get us to gaze upon it and to think of our Lord's suffering. It becomes something quite again. Roman Catholic friend of mine was telling me the story of a monk friend of his who has a crucifix and he always keeps it with him because it's blessed with an indulgence from the Pope, and if he kisses it in the hour of his death, he gets to skip purgatory. Well, then that crucifix isn't quite exactly the same thing as we mean by a crucifix, right? And so these are the distinctions that must be made in theology.
With only about 30 seconds, real quickly, why do you think the church isn't cranking out men like John of Damascus today? Or is it? About 30 seconds.
I've got 30 seconds to issue an indictment against our education system. I'll just leave it there. It used to be that the last thing you were allowed to study was theology. After you had studied mathematics, philosophy, everything else in the world, and now it seems to me that we treat treat theology as if it's a trade. You know, we can run you through this in a few weeks, and most of your seminary training can be taken up with not the heavy lifting of theology, but with trade school kind of learning knacks and skills and reading business books. So I think that's why we don't see many of these guys today.
Pastor Heath Curtis is pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Warden, Illinois, and Zion Lutheran Church in Carpenter, Illinois. Thank you very much, Heath.
Always good to be here, Todd.